1st, it's Food Friday. And while many of us are grounded due to the pandemic and travel restrictions, we're going to travel vicariously via food and memories to Russia. Our next guest has been visiting the country during the Soviet era and after as a tour guide, a language and food scholar, and author. She's written cookbooks of Russian cuisine as well as Nordic and Georgian cuisines, to name a few, and was founding editor of Gastronomica, the Journal of Food and Culture. Dara Goldstein is currently the Wilcox B. and Harriet M. Adsit Professor of Russian Emerita at Williams College, and her latest cookbook is called Beyond the North Wind, Russia in Recipes and Lore. Dara, ochen priyatna, and welcome to Central Time.
Thank you, Judith.
It's a pleasure to talk with you, and I'm so glad to be able to do this because I, too, have a history with Russia. I have a master's in Russian history, and I was in Moscow from mid-1993 to mid-1994.
So I'm sure you have lots of stories to tell. That was quite a time to be there.
It was a wild time, let's put it that way. Well, I have experienced this. I'm wondering if you have, too. When Americans learn that you have a connection to Russia, and especially for you with Russian food, I'm guessing that they have some pretty interesting ideas about what Russian food is.
Yeah, and one of my missions is to overturn those ideas, those stereotypes that Russian food is really heavy, really bland, pretty uninteresting. I think that some of that comes from people who went during the Soviet era and only ate in institutional restaurants. And indeed, the food was pretty terrible. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the heaviness that people ascribe to it is really not part of what is the elemental Russian cuisine, which I see as really coming from the soil, from the forest, from the fields. So because of religious proscriptions over the years, there were close to 200 days that were considered fast days where people weren't supposed to have any meat or dairy products. So it's really very heavily vegetable based, and in some cases, even what we would consider vegan, though obviously they weren't using that to describe it.
And I agree. And I think one of the things that stands out to me about Russian cuisine is that it is very seasonal and a really long, hard season in much of Russia. It's such a huge country. You can't say for all of it, but it's a really hard, long winter. And so, yes, there are things like beets and potatoes and cabbage, but they also do wonderful things with them.
Yeah, and particularly fermentation, you know, which is so trendy in the United States now. The Russians have been doing that for centuries. I mean, it's a way to capture the goodness and actually create more goodness through allowing the probiotics of the bacteria, the good bacteria, to come forth in this food. So they found ways to stay healthy even when the actual range of foods has been somewhat limited.
Well, and I was going to talk about fermentation later, but since you brought it up, let's talk a little more about that, because as you said, fermentation is a very popular thing here, has been for years, but it's almost even trendy, I would say, at this point in the U.S. You have one of the recipes that you shared with us is 20-minute pickles, and that is up at wpr.org/food. Tell us about how fermentation, especially things like pickles, is different in Russia than how we might do it here.
First, I just want to say that those 20-minute pickles are not fermented. That's a quick fix.
Okay.
You can make them in 20 minutes and they don't have to ferment. They still taste really good, but they are not the classic Russian pickle, which takes at least 3 days if you want them slightly salted, and certainly longer if you want them a bit more intense. But the main difference, I think, as Americans, when we think of pickles or even dill pickles, they are preserved in vinegar. So they have this nice vinegary bite to them. But the classic Russian method is simply to salt them, to layer the fresh cucumbers with salt, with garlic, with dill. They often add things like horseradish or cherry or black currant leaves, because those have a lot of tannin in them, and so they help keep the pickles crisp. So you just salt the cucumbers. You can do this with berries. You can do it with mushrooms. Obviously, cabbage is a very favorite one. And just let it sit for anywhere, depending on what your primary ingredient is, 3 days to several months. And then you have something that is really delicious and really healthy.
And that fermentation comes out in different dishes too. So there is a very lightly alcoholic beverage called kvass, and it's very refreshing, and it has that fermentation edge to it as well.
It does. And what I've been doing this summer is making raspberry kvass, because it's really easy. You just take fresh raspberries and allow them to ferment for basically 12 to 24 hours with a little bit of yeast and some honey. And it's sort of like a fruity champagne. It's really lovely.
Oh, that sounds delicious. And there is that kind of edge to even the really dark Russian black bread too, that I have to say my memories of the black bread is taking a big sniff of it before downing a little rumichki of vodka. So you kind of like prepare your nose and your taste buds for the vodka. And there is something about Russian cuisine that they really love those flavors that kind of put a little edge on things.
Yeah. And you've pinned it with the vodka.
We're talking with Dara Goldstein right now about her new book that celebrates Russian cuisine and lore. It is called Beyond the North Wind, Russia in Recipes and Lore. And you can give us a call at 800-642-1234 with your questions or comments about Russian cuisine. And Dara, I love that what you are really looking to do in this book is to kind of strip away a lot of the influences that are later additions to Russian cuisine. And again, you know, the Soviet period brought together even more. I mean, Russia itself is incredibly diverse in different ethnic groups, but brought in that many more in the Soviet Union. And there are a lot of dishes that you could have every day on the street in Moscow, but actually it comes from Azerbaijan or Georgia or Estonia or Ukraine, like the borscht. And you really wanted to go to the heart of Russian food tradition, and you went very far away. Tell us about your expedition to the Kola Peninsula.
I did. My very first cookbook, which I published in 1983, was a Russian cookbook that looked at Russian cuisine writ large that you've just described. So it had recipes from all of the different Soviet republics. They were very far flung. And it looked at 19th century Russian haute cuisine, which was basically French food that had been Russified. And for this book, I was trying to get to something more elemental, like what are the true flavors of Russia and where will I find them? And I realized that I wouldn't really find them in the sort of Central European swath of Russia, because there has been such an influx of foreigners over the centuries. I decided I had to go to a very remote place, namely the Kola Peninsula up above the Arctic Circle, where there is a Greek myth about Hyperborea, Beyond the North Wind, which is where I got the title for the book, the idea for the book. It was a utopia where the sun never set and the people were all tall, blonde, and beautiful. And it was the birthplace of technology. And geographers have ascertained, or they say they've ascertained, that this utopia was in the Kola Peninsula, as described by Pliny and Herodotus. So I decided that's where I had to go to strip back the layers and find, you know, what's gorgeous in all of the ugliness that often surrounds Russia.
But what's funny is you didn't go when there is sunshine all day. You went when there is almost no sunshine, because you went in the winter.
Yeah, I did go in the summer too, but it's just not the same. I actually really love the cold, because, and the ice, you know, it's not just white. It's lavender, it's pink, it's shades of blue, and the world just sparkles. I know it's not for everyone, but I think it's pretty wonderful.
I actually have to say I was jealous reading about it. So I think you and I are birds of a feather. You talk about the idea of Russian hospitality and how even if there is not much available, either in stores or even in someone's home, there is this tremendous hospitality, this warmth, and this idea of they might not have much, but they are going to give it all to you. And you tell a great story about being introduced to, I believe he was a cardiologist, and you're thinking, you know, very well-off, well-respected person. He was living in a small communal apartment, but he put together, well, there was vodka, but he also put together something simple and delicious. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, it was really eye-opening because I had, you know, an idea of these grand digs that he would be living in and was shocked to find that he was living in squalor, basically, in this tiny room. And he wouldn't allow me to go into the kitchen, which I understood because communal kitchens that were shared with 10 other families were often not so clean and chaotic. And so I sat in his small, it was like a 9x12 room, reading Russian poetry. Of course, it was dusk outside. It was all very romantic, if you tend to romanticize those things as I do. And he came in with this steaming cast iron skillet that was filled with potatoes that he had dug himself, because the Russians love to go and have plots where they grow potatoes so they know that they can always provide for themselves. And they'd been cooked in lots of butter, which I noted since he was a cardiologist, and lots of garlic. And they were crisp but creamy on the inside. And he went over to the window. They have double-paned windows, as you probably remember, and reached outside, it was wintertime, and pulled in an icy bottle of vodka. And from under the bed, he pulled out a jar that was filled with salted mushrooms, the way I described making them. And it was one of the most perfect meals I've ever had in my life.
We are talking right now with Dara Goldstein about her latest cookbook, A Vibrant Traditional Russian Cooking. It is called Beyond the North Wind. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you visited Russia and sampled some of the cuisine? Tell us about your experiences. Or if you've wanted to visit, is there a reason? Is there a dish? What questions do you have for Dara about what you should eat or how you can track down the best food there? Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation in just a bit. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Judith Sears Poisson. Right now, we continue our talk with Dara Goldstein, author of the new book, Beyond the North Wind, Russia in Recipes and Lore. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Have you tried making Russian dishes before? How did they come out? Would you like some suggestions for something else to try? Or maybe you have questions for Dara or me about our time in Russia. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@wpr.org. And Dara, I don't know if you know this, but part of Wisconsin, Door County, which is a peninsula in Green Bay and Lake Michigan, is known for its cherries. And you have You have a recipe for oven braised veal stew with cherries. And you say that Russians, like Wisconsinites, I would say, are cherry connoisseurs. Tell us about that recipe.
I love this recipe because it's so simple and it's so rich tasting. You basically take veal cubes, so veal for stew, and you could use beef if you don't want to eat veal. And you brown it in a casserole on top of the stove. And then you take sour cherries and simmer them briefly with cardamom and cinnamon. And you make a kind of infused sauce with that, add it to the casserole, and then put the stew into the oven to braise for an hour and a half or 2 hours. So it really couldn't be simpler. And it's really nice served over noodles or over potatoes. And it has that, again, one of the things that's so important to Russians is this taste for the sour, sour being a very positive attribute, mm-hmm. not something negative. And so this stew has that wonderful sour edge to it.
It sounds delicious, and it's actually cooling down a bit here in Wisconsin, so maybe time to think about having a stew in the oven for a couple hours. We talked a little bit about vodka earlier. You have recipes in your book for flavored vodka. What are some of the flavors that you really enjoy?
There are so many. It's a long, this is another thing that is pretty trendy in the States, to have all these flavored vodkas. And we have a lot of commercial ones as well. I think Absolut was one of the first to come out with these infusions. But the Russians have been doing it for hundreds of years, and originally as a medicinal practice to heal whatever ailed you. So one of my favorites is Pirtsovka, which is a pepper vodka. That has a really nice bite. I think perhaps my Absolut favorite, Absolut as in a complete favorite, not the Swedish vodka, is for horseradish vodka. I really love that too. And I've got one for cherry, which uses the pits of cherries. That one is very subtle. They do some with birch buds that is a bit bitter, maybe not quite as much to American taste, but you can, you know, do coriander is really lovely, lemon, orange, you name it. They just love to infuse.
Well, and to go along with the vodka, which is always served ice cold, you have to have zakuski, which are the nibbles and snacks that are often served with them. What are some of your favorite zakuski?
I think nothing beats black bread with some really wonderful butter on it. And it could be cultured butter that has been allowed to ferment ever so slightly. So again, it has this tang. I really like things like pickled smelts. I think in the Midwest, you have great smelts available. And those are done in vinegar. But anything that is tangy goes really well with vodka. An array of pickles is good. I like to make a potato salad with salted salmon. So instead of smoking salmon, you can just salt the salmon and leave it for 24 hours to, you know, up to 3 days, and it cures it really nicely.
We're talking with Dara Goldstein right now about her new book, Beyond the North Wind, Russia in Recipes and Lore. And let's go to the phones, and Chris in Baraboo is up. Hi, Chris.
Hello. I was just going to talk and say that I think all I really remember is eating a blini and caviar and I think a lot of cream cheese type things when I was in Russia.
That sounds pretty good to me.
Well, you didn't do badly. I mean, there are a few things that are more wonderful than blini, which are the Russian pancakes served with caviar, and that would be a perfect accompaniment to vodka. And the cream cheese that you're talking about is probably more like a curd cheese, the farmer's cheese, tvorog. I'm guessing that is used a lot in baking, but you can also eat it straight or have it in salads. It's a really wonderful thing.
My mouth
a bit
is watering.
Like a dry cottage cheese.
Yeah. Thanks for that call, Chris. Let's go while we still have time to Leo in northern Wisconsin. Hi, Leo.
Hey. I've been listening to your radio show as I'm traveling up in northern Wisconsin. And back in, I'd say about 10, 12 years ago, I worked for a special effects company. We were doing a big trade show up in St. Petersburg, Russia. And at one of the restaurants we went to several times, my favorite dish was a soup which they made with noodles and onions and chicken liver. And it was one of the most delicious things I've ever had. And ever since I came home, I've been trying to duplicate that recipe, and I just can't quite get it right. I'm probably missing a couple of spices that I may not be able to even get in this country. So,
well, I wonder if Dara might have any suggestions. That's a new one to me, Dara. Is that something that you've had?
Yeah, Yeah, that one isn't familiar to me, but I would recommend that you try something called rasulnik, which is a soup that has onions and it has a kidney in it. Hmm. So if you're looking for that flavor that you get from innards, it also has dill pickles, so it has this sour tang. It's a really beautiful soup, even if it doesn't sound so good in my description. You know, you say kidneys to Americans, and they're like, ooh. But
so maybe
it's really quite delicious.
Yeah,
so
you maybe could, Googling, maybe Googling chicken liver soup Russia, and maybe that will give you some suggestions, Leo. But I know that feeling. There are some things that my mother cooked when I was a child that I have not been able to duplicate. So hold on to your memory and keep trying. Dara, in the last minute or so, I do know that a lot of people think of Russia. They have that very bleak Soviet idea of Russia. Can you give us a 30-second pep talk for Russian dishes and flavors to really be open to trying?
I just want to say that it's really hard these days when there's so much bad news about Russia. And I would love for people to try to look beyond that, if possible, to think about the gloriousness of Russian culture. And one of the Russian proverbs is, a cottage is beautiful not for its walls, but for its pies. Hmm. So if you can think about these luscious pies, both savory and sweet, it's pretty glorious. And I urge everyone to try a taste of Russia.
Perfect. Dara, thank you so much, Spasibo Bolshoye, for being with us today.
Thank you, Judith.
Dara Goldstein is the Wilcox B. and Harriet Adsit Professor of Russian Emerita at Williams College. We talked about her new book, Beyond the North Wind, Russia in Recipes and Lore.